I trust that council has signed up with the sign-up sheets that you will see. If you haven't yet, if you will before you leave, that would be great. We appreciate it. I want to welcome you to our afternoon session. And I believe our first case today is the Russell case with Mr. Powers and Ms. Campbell. And give me just a moment. I think technology makes us slower sometimes. Mr. Powers, if you're ready, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal, sir?
Yes, Your Honor, I would. I'd like to reserve about 5 minutes. I'm not able to do that.
Very good. Thank you.
May it please the Court, my name is McMillan Powers, and I'm here representing Henry Russell on the appeal of his conviction for grand larceny and grand larceny with the intent to steal, to sell. Mr. Russell was tried and convicted last year on a very unusual case. It was a 36-count indictment. The first 33 counts were involving forging, uttering, and receiving, obtaining money by false pretenses on bad checks that were allegedly written on his sister's account. The sister was deceased at the time of trial. The other sister testified kind of equivocating, and the court struck all those to say she didn't cooperate, and the Commonwealth was not able to make out any case in regard to that. Interestingly enough, however, when she was testifying in regard to the checks, she said, I really got it wrong. If you'll look at her testimony, she said, I got it wrong. I was presumptuous, and really she did authorize my brother to do this. That was as to the checks, not as to the personal property, but as to the checks. But that's a significant piece of testimony, I think, because it does state in some measure what the state of mind was of the deceased sister. But nevertheless, we get to that issue now as to whether or not the grand larceny and grand larceny with intent can stand. Grand larceny with intent to sell is not really an issue here because that was never raised in the trial court, so I'm not really here on that. I'm not sure I have much success with that issue in any event, but nevertheless, that's not here. It is here on grand larceny. Sometime during the summer, and obviously before October the 3rd of 2013, property was missing from 2728 Portsmouth Boulevard, which is a home, it's a residence that was co-owned by the three siblings, and they were Sharon and Beverly and my client Henry. Beverly died prior to trial. Sharon is the one that brought the allegation. She filed the complaint with the police alleging that property was taken by her brother. He sold it and took off with the money.
Can I ask you, Mr. Powers, to clarify one thing?
Sure.
The tape that I watched of your client, he talked about the fact that the home had been conveyed by the sister Sharon and by him to Beverly, that she owned the home entirely. Why did that not apply to the property, the personal property?
Okay.
The things that he sold, took out of the home and sold.
It's a perceptive question, but the reason it doesn't apply is because Sharon's testimony is, we inherited all of the personal property. When asked about that, and unfortunately for the Commonwealth, although fortunately I think for my client, the Commonwealth never really dwelt on the larceny of the personal property. They really went after the check stuff, and the check case was a terrible case and was struck, but they never really went in great detail on all the stuff on the personal property. And in fact, Sharon never even listed what was stolen. That doesn't even come in until Goodell comes and testifies as a detective, and he says there's some kind of a list, and he reads a few things off the list. But the sister who files the complaint never talks about what personal property is actually stolen, but she does say it was all ours, jointly owned by all three of us. And so for that reason, the idea that the property was clearly the real estate, the real estate gets conveyed, they've consolidated title in her, but all the personality that remains in the house still is jointly owned. And the issue really is very narrowly whether or not the it's true, I think we can see that in business propositions with partners, and I've cited some cases there, and I'll be glad to go over those cases with you if you want to, but clearly you're not stealing in a partnership sense in a larceny, a common law larceny. Now, there are cases subsequent to the Vaughn case, which kind of starts that line of cases in Virginia, but subsequent to that, they talk about being able to do other business crimes that are not common law larceny, and you can commit crimes in a partnership or in a LLC or in any sort of a corporate setting where you have joint ownerships, particularly in partnerships. But this is not that situation. These are heirs, and all three of them jointly own this property. There's an undivided and indivisible interest in all the property. I own one-third of every piece of china, and you own one-third, not that I have a third, until we get to the point of division.
So, and they never got there. I know you argue that he owns part of it, and so when he sells it, he has a right to do that.
He has a right.
But why, if that's the case, can he sell it without their permission and not reimburse them for their portion of it? Why isn't that great larceny at that point?
Now we're getting into exactly what the Vaughn cases and all these talk about, when and in the same opinions where we just don't want criminal activity to enforce civil rights, a civil remedy. And that's what's going to be happening here with this conviction if it stands. If there is an accounting of the estate, then he will be debited, as it were, for the value of whatever it is he sold. Let's just say that all the personal property together is worth, for easy math, $3,000. And he sells $500 worth of stuff. When it comes time to do the accounting and to divide up the estate and then do the disbursement, your commissioner of accounts is going to look at this thing and he is going to say, okay, everybody gets $1,000 worth of stuff if you either liquidate it or you apportion it out. But poor Mr. Henry, you're only going to get $500 worth because $500 has already gone to you. And that's how it gets settled, and that's how it would be settled in a civil case.
The most valuable thing, though, is the armoire, and that's something everybody wants.
Then he has to reimburse. And they have civil remedies. They can sue him for conversion civilly. They can sue him in debt new, one of my favorite causes of action. I mean, they can sue him and go and get the stuff back, or they can go to the pawn shop and they can lien that with a civil action. They have other civil remedies, and that's the dilemma here. That's the problem of saying this is a criminal remedy when it's really a civil exercise of remedy that needs to be prosecuted by the remaining sister. It just doesn't work when you try to say, how do you divide the property up and come to a civil remedy and then apply a criminal sanction of a conviction for grand larceny? The other problem that is mentioned there in the closing by defense counsel is there is no evidence. Exactly to the point that you mentioned, Your Honor, there's no evidence that the property that was taken and sold was not already his. There's no evidence that it was not previously divided up. And that's why the assignment of areas, there's no evidence that it was Beverly's personal property. And that's what the indictment says. The indictment does not say that he took property that was jointly owned by the three, or they took property from the estate.
Well, the trial judge makes a factual finding, does he not, that the property was jointly owned?
Yes.
So how do we, as an appellate court, look behind a factual finding when he says it's jointly owned?
If it's jointly owned, then...
Because you got testimony to that effect.
The testimony is to that effect, and he makes a finding that it's jointly owned. If it is jointly owned, how can he steal what he jointly owns? Now, you can only do that if you begin to apportion out what his one-third interest is. And that's not the purview of a criminal court. That is an action that the sister needs to bring in civil court, sue him, like say, for conversion or for some other remedy that she might have, sue him for an accounting. She has remedies. She does not have the remedy of using the criminal process to bludgeon her brother. She's never getting the stuff back if the criminal remedy is what she goes after. She'll never get it back. So it's clear she did not intend to get the property back. She intended something else. But when she comes in and testifies, whoops, I made a mistake about the check. My sister really did authorize that. There's clearly, after she testifies and she does not advance the Commonwealth's case, defense counsel wisely makes a strategic decision not to cross-examine her, because I think he would have elicited the same type of information potentially. Well, she also authorized him to take these pieces of property and sell them. We don't know. That's all what you find out in a civil matter when you go through discovery and you do the interrogatories and you do all that stuff and you pay lots of people lots of money for lots of hours, and everybody's happy when it's a civil case. But here, you can't just say that he took property that wasn't his. Now, what this court needs to do in that area, and this is what I'm asking the court to do, is I'm asking the court to make it clear in the case law that just as in a partnership, in a situation with heirs, you cannot steal from yourself when you're talking about heirs. Now, you can steal from the estate, but you're not charged with that. You can embezzle. There are other statutes under which the man could have been charged. But when it's a common law larceny charge against a person who is now deceased, you're going to have to put on better evidence than the common law put on. And that's our problem with this. There's not any evidence that the property actually belonged to her, and there is no evidence that he did not have permission. Now, I grant that proving a negative is a problem for the Commonwealth, but they could have easily done that with their chief witness, the sister. You know, they could have had Sharon testify, I know my sister never gave him permission, but she didn't say that. And then Goodell testifies, and then he backtracks on his testimony.
In the police interview, he says, my sister Beverly didn't even know I was doing this, and he said, but she later found out.
And there is a world of difference criminally between somebody knowing and somebody giving permission, and that's the issue here. She didn't know is not the same as she didn't give permission. She didn't know that I took my own property. And maybe she wanted that piece, but we had never divided it up, and so now she's going to sue me civilly. Sorry, bad on me, but that is not a criminal act. Taking
Counsel,
something that I know.
Is the permission really irrelevant if he's a part owner of the property?
Certainly it's irrelevant. If he actually owns it, and he does own it, so granting permission is irrelevant to that extent, but even if she had withheld permission, it doesn't matter. It's still his. Whether she grants it or doesn't, it's a red herring, and the judge bought the red herring from the Commonwealth. And I just respectfully say he got it wrong. He made a factual finding it was jointly owned and then comes to the wrong legal conclusion, guilt.
So is it your contention then that the Commonwealth is required to prove as an element of the offense that the property belonged to another? Not to the person who...
It needs to prove that it belongs to the person named in the indictment.
Right.
Did steal from Beverly. You got to prove it belongs to Beverly. That is a fundamental concept of the common law of crime of larceny. Taking and carrying away the personal property of another person, and here we name that person. They must have exclusive possession. It must be theirs and theirs alone. And that's the error here. That's what we think. Now, I believe that the common law gives remedy here, and that you can come to that conclusion and just write that opinion. So it says common law larceny does not apply in heirs, just like it doesn't in a business partnership. I can't steal from the partnership. If all the assets are mine and I take $10 out of the till, my partner can't sue me. He can sue me, but he can't come after me criminally. And that's, I think, where we are here. And I would respectfully request that this court find that to be the case, find that there was error on the part of the judge, and reverse and send this back. Thank you very much. I want to reserve the remaining time, which I believe is about 2.5 minutes.
It's correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ms. Campbell.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. And the Commonwealth in this case is asking you to affirm the convictions because the defendant knowingly removed property from the house that he knew they belonged to him and his sister. And because they belonged to his sister and he permanently intended to steal them, he's guilty of this grand larceny. And the first set of assignment of errors all focus on whether or not the Commonwealth proved that this property belonged to Beverly Gray. And the Commonwealth, as the trial court noted in its fact-finding, did prove, based on both the testimony of the other sister and the detective's testimony and what was admitted on the DVD of the interview of the defendant, that these siblings all owned these pieces of property together. Therefore, since they owned them together, Beverly Gray did own them, and she did have a property interest in these items that the defendant permanently removed and sold. Therefore, the Commonwealth has proven that element of the offense, that it is the property of another. The assignment of error is not that the trial court erred in determining the defendant could not steal from himself. The assignment of error is that the Commonwealth, challenging the sufficiency of the evidence regarding the Commonwealth's proof that Beverly Gray owned the property. And I know both the defendant's brief and my brief touch on the other issues the defendant has raised, but to the extent the arguments are going beyond what that assignment of error actually is, the Commonwealth would argue that they're barred by 5A20. But turning to it, the totality of the evidence does establish that Beverly Gray had an interest in that property, and the defendant clearly intended to permanently deprive her of those when he stole them. And to the extent he's now claiming a claim of right, as you see in Butts and Pierce, those cases are very different, where the defendant always had a claim of right, saying, I had sole ownership or proprietary interest in the wages or the items, and therefore that's why I stole them. That's not the evidence here. There's no evidence that defendant ever claimed that he was the sole owner of any of those properties. He had guilty knowledge from the start. This is clearly evidenced by his interview, where he keeps saying they didn't know, keeps asking the detective how much trouble he's in for what he's done. He knew that he took these items without his sister's knowledge or permission, and that it was a larceny, and he knew he was in trouble.
How do you respond to opposing counsel's argument that that may be the case, but because he was a part owner of this personal property that was sold, even though it was in a house owned at that point solely by his sister, that it's a matter to be recovered in a civil matter, it's not a criminal matter, because he can't steal by selling property that he's a partial owner of?
I think that just because there could be a civil remedy, there could be civil remedies in numerous criminal cases, and just because there's a civil remedy and you could sue and get a monetary amount because of the crime that's been committed against you does not mean that a crime has still not been committed. And the crime that was committed was the violation of her personal property rights in those items. And that's the purpose of larceny, is to prevent people from infringing on your property rights and your right to have this property and it not to be stolen and taken from you and permanently deprived from it.
I'm sorry, counsel, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's okay.
So is it your contention then that you can steal property, that a defendant can steal property which he jointly owns with another?
Yes, I think in the context of this case, yes. I think that the Vaughn case and other cases talk about where partnerships and corporations are different entities in themselves based on property rights. And I'll concede that I am not very conversant in property rights, but people who are joint tenants own undivided interests in property, and they cannot. The property law, and I quoted Thompson in my brief, says that they cannot sell away the other's rights, because someone else has a right in it. So yes, I think excluding cases where there might be partnership law, which is very different from this type of law, you cannot sell or give away something without committing a larceny and infringing on someone else's property rights in the context of personal property.
Thank you.
Turning to the second assignment of error, whether or not the evidence proved that the defendant had permission or did not have permission, the trial court also made factual findings in regards to that when he said he admitted his sisters did not know that he took it, and thereby, if they did not know and he was selling these things, the trial court specifically said that it found that he must not have had permission. And it also goes, what further evidence that shows he didn't have permission is that Sharon filed a police report based on these items being stolen. And at the time, Sharon was actually power of attorney for Beverly, so she was the one who would be able to take out these charges and for Beverly. And she would not have done that if her or Beverly had given him permission to sell the items. So clearly, based on that evidence, the evidence that the defendant clearly had guilty knowledge, he did not have permission to do this. And if the court has no further questions, we would just ask that you affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell.
Mr. Powers, can I ask you sort of a hypothetical?
Certainly.
You and I jointly own a very valuable antique. Let's just say an armoire. And you really care about it. It's your most valued possession. And I really could care less about the possession. I just like some money. And I take it out and sell it. Is it your contention that your only remedy against me is a civil one?
Absolutely. If we are joint owners, that is my remedy. And I will sue you and I will hound you from here to the interrogatories and back to get that back. And I will file a suit in Denton and force you to go to wherever it was that you got rid of it and reclaim it somehow, pay double, pay triple, pay whatever. I'm coming to you as the civil offender. That's not a crime. We're joint owners. My brother and I own the car together. And he decides he wants to sell the car. I cannot go after him as a criminal matter for larceny. That's just—it's not something that is available to me.
Why would it be different for personal property than for real property?
Personal property, real property is different. Real property, you've got a. There's a very practical difference there, and I think the common law recognized that. You've got a piece of dirt, and it's going to be very difficult for me to secrete that dirt like I can personal property. I've taken the armoire, or I've taken the car, or I've taken the jewelry, and I've hidden it someplace. I've given it to somebody, and I've kind of hidden it. That's very different than a piece of dirt. I've got the 5 acres, you know, that Mom and Dad left us. I cannot hide that from my brother. And he has a very easy remedy to find it and then reclaim it. But it's very different with those two. Let me just say in regard to the one issue, if I might, beyond my time and the assignment of error, I'm not saying that we have another assignment of error that somehow you can't steal from yourself. That is merely explaining how it is that you analyze the fact that it's not his property. That's all that is. That's just a way to analyze that it's not the property of Beverly. It can't be the property of Beverly, and you convict a guy of grand larceny because he is now being told that he has stolen from himself, and that's just not possible. You cannot do that, and I will leave with you the idea that on the two other things, on the power of attorney for her to bring these charges, if that's what the power of attorney enables her to do, I'm not quite certain that that's good, but even if that is good, she admits, I got it all wrong on the checks. So how do we know she didn't get it all wrong on the personal property? She did give permission to write the checks. She did authorize the checks to be written, and she retracts that her sister Beverly did give permission to do that. So Sharon retracts that. Why is it that she's not also wrong in regard to the personal property, although we never get to that issue? But just because she has the power of attorney doesn't make her prescient or doesn't make her have super knowledge of all the facts, because she obviously got some of the facts wrong and she admits it.
Thank you, Mr. Powers. The panel have any additional questions?
No.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
We're moving on to I just forgot to break out. I forgot about